shall not fail throughout eternity. And amen.
Let's give it up for the graybeards. One of my favorite parts about being on the chapel committee is that I get to gather information about people and not have it labeled as stalking. So this week I learned that our speaker, Christy Jeske, likes to play a good game of tennis, is very good at Scrabble, and is highly competitive. I also learned that she can't jump to save her life. So I've decided to get on Christy's good side. I'm going to challenge her to a game of Scrabble, and she's going to win because I'm no good at all. But then if I need to feel better about myself, I'll just start jumping and we'll see who feels better. So please join me in welcoming our speaker, Christy Jeske.
Hello.
It's true. I can't jump. Yeah. Well, thanks, Adam, for sharing those lovely details of my life.
That was all from internet research.
Shut up.
Except the jumping.
Oh, okay. I was like, where on the internet does it say that I can't jump? But now, here it is, recorded for all to know. Christy Jeske cannot jump. So, at the beginning of February, I received an email telling me that I was not accepted into the University of Wisconsin Department of Sociology graduate program. Now, granted, it's the top sociology program in the country, but it was my first choice, and it was not supposed to happen. Let me tell you that I have great grade point averages. I have years' experience around the world doing things that lots of people tell me are awesome, and I have written a book, and I spanked the GRE, and I have won major awards, and I am a wonderful person. So how could they not let me? That's what I wanted to know. So I spent a few days kind of all weepy, feeling sorry for myself. And I thought back to a time that this had happened before. When I was in high school, my first choice for college was a private liberal arts college that will remain unnamed. And I was actually the valedictorian of my high school class. And so I thought I could get in anywhere I wanted to. And that was my first choice. And I got this letter saying, no, you're put on a wait list. And I just wept by the side of my bed. And so here I was again, feeling all weepy about this. But I realized, remembering back to that previous time that this had happened, and this present time, I had an overwhelming sense that this was not a mistake, and this was not an accident, but this was God saying no to something. God was involved in this. It was not an accident. But it happened to come at a time when I also, pretty much my whole life was an enormous question mark. We had been waiting for a whole year since I came back from South Africa to apply to grad school and then waited another couple months to hear this result of this no. In the meantime, we had put on hold where we were going to live permanently. We were renting because we didn't know if we wanted to live outside of Madison or near the campus. I had put on hold getting a full-time job. I was working at home in something that was temporary, doing writing. We had also written a book proposal, Adam and I, and we had waited months to hear from publishers regarding that. Not knowing what neighborhood we were going to live in, we'd put on hold kind of deepening our friendships in our neighborhood. We'd put on hold buying furniture, buying a car. Everything was a big question mark. So when I got this first no, my brain starts spinning right away and thinking, what if God says no to everything? How will I survive if everything that I'm hoping for right now is a big no? Now, fast forward to the present. God has said yes to a ton of different things. Some of you may have heard that last Friday we bought a house, so that's exciting. We know where we're going to live. And a few weeks after the sociology department wrote to me, the anthropology department I had also applied for wrote and said they had accepted me. So, hooray. Now I'm accepted somewhere. I feel all good about myself. we also got word from a publisher saying they want to publish our book. So, hooray. Lots of yeses. And I've had other times in life like this, too. I think back to college. I was at the University of Wisconsin, and I was just golden girl. Everything felt so good in my life at that time. I loved school. I got good grades. I graduated within 4 years with lots of electives I loved. I met Adam. I got engaged. No, it's coming. I'm getting there. Lots of great friendships growing in my faith, part of a large Christian organization, which will remain unnamed as well. I was part of a group we'd started that was meeting in my dorm room every Tuesday night. We called it The Revolution, and we would meet and read the Bible and talk about how we were going to change the world. And we were just full of excitement, clarity for the future, overflowing to help other people. God just kept saying yes. So I think of times like that, and times when God really just says no and you feel all yucky. But the thing is, God does not love us any less when he says no than when he says yes. As a kid, I memorized the verse, Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, which says, among other things, it says, God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. Now, that's all great and fine, but sometimes we really want to read into that. God has said, never will I deny you anything, never will I let you be sad. But God doesn't say that. Instead, the verse also says, be content with what you have, to which I say, grr. So how do we respond to times when God says no, and how do we respond to times when God says yes? I want to start with the times when he says no. So around the time I got this no to the sociology department, Phoebe and Zeke, my kids, Zeke is having a sick day today, so don't get too near him, he'll cough on you. But they were playing Monopoly Junior, and they're 5 and 7, and when they finished, Zeke had won, and he said calmly, I won. And Phoebe burst into tears and said, Megan, stop, he's being mean, he's hurting my feelings. And I was sitting there, and I gave her a hug, and I said, honey, I know your feelings are hurt, but it's not his fault. He's not being mean. And I said, that's just the way the game turned out. And if we live long enough, we're all going to lose some games, and it will hurt. It will hurt our feelings. But it doesn't help to blame the winners, and it doesn't help to blame the dice or the rules of the game. Eventually, even we valedictorians and perfectionists and even people who are steeped in prayer will get no's in life from God. I think about David in the Old Testament who wanted to build a temple, and God said, no, not in your lifetime. I think about Jesus who said, God, take away this cup of suffering if it's your will. And God obviously said, no, I have a different plan for you. So just because you get a no doesn't mean that you're messing up. It can just mean that God is steering you because God is in charge. Yeah. So Phoebe snuggled up in my arms after this game, and I held her. And after a couple of minutes, then I peeled her away, and I said, okay, now it's time to help clean up the game. And she hates that. She's a girl who could cry. Well, actually, we timed her when she was about 3. She cried for a whole hour straight over some small thing like losing a game. And she can still do this. And I often just want to say to her, it's just a game of Monopoly Junior. Would you get out and enjoy your life? And I feel like God needs to say that to me sometimes, too, that I need to choose not to wallow in sadness over things because he has so many other good things in life. We also need to choose not to waver in our trust in God in times when he says no. I think of it kind of like when hard things happen in your marriage. Your tendency is to want to turn away and maybe go to something else that makes you happy. And I feel like sometimes when things happen that are hard, that God gives us no answers in life, we're tempted to go away to sort of other adulterers like bitterness and self-pity. So in this book that you may have heard of, Into the Mud, that I wrote about, 2 years ago, I wrote it while we were living in South Africa, I share the story of a woman named Ngiwe, who was one of our clients in a microfinance project that we were working with in South Africa. And she had had some major no's in her life. Her sister had died of AIDS. She was watching her sister's 2 very young children. She had been running a business for quite a while a lot of other friends around there and other microfinance clients that we had were failing in their businesses. And she was a Christian, and I asked her, how is it that you persevere so well in so many things in life during hard times? And she said, you know, I remember that when I became a Christian, I was taught that in the life of a person, there will be good times and bad times. In bad times, I don't move from this position to this position. With her limited English, position was the best word she could find, but I got the idea. She would persevere in the tasks and places the Lord had made for her, running a business, improving her family and community, and having faith in Jesus Christ. She said, "In bad times, the Lord gives me strength to stand." Often we hear this phrase when we go through hard times, that when God closes a door, he opens a window. Now, sometimes that's true. In my case, there was another window, and I got to kind of crawl out into this whole new future of the Department of Anthropology. And when I look back at my life, instead of going to this private liberal arts college, I went to UW-Madison, and here I am living in Madison today, married to my wonderful husband, etc. So God sometimes has a better plan for us. Now, sometimes, though, I like that phrase, God opens a window, because it's just there to let in some light. We don't always get to leave the little cubicle that we're in. It might be kind of dark and we're tired of it. We'd like to be out somewhere else doing other things, and God doesn't open a door right away for us to walk out. Sometimes life is just hard. I think about a passage that I read shortly after I got this rejection letter from the Book of Lamentations. And obviously it's a lament poem. What I learned a couple years ago is that it's a very carefully crafted book in a poetic form, and the center of the poem is where the heart of the meaning is, that the whole poem is organized to focus on that center. So all through the beginning, you have Jeremiah lamenting over these terrible, terrible things. You have mothers eating their own babies. You have people taken into exile. You have hundreds and thousands killed. You have the holy temple of God being destroyed. So this man is getting terrible things in his life. And he has worked so hard for other things to happen. And instead, he's getting a future that he didn't ask for. But in the center of this poem, after all these terrible things he talks about, he says, "My soul is downcast within me, yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope." Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. His compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. Sorry, now you got I got your attention. I read this, and I read it. "Your compassions are new every morning." And I said, I need to start counting those compassions. And so I made a goal that every single day in my journal, I would write down one thing that told me God's compassion. And I challenge you to do that. If you're in a time when God is saying no, or even if he's in a time when he's saying yes to you in a lot of things, I think that we need to count his compassions and remember that they're new. Even when our soul is downcast within us, he's constantly doing new and wonderful things. So let's turn to the yes side. we think that it will be easy to follow God in times when he's saying yes. It seems like it should. But if you look at the Bible, often you see that suffering draws people to God, and times when things are all good and fine are when people often turn away from God. You look at the church in Laodicea, who says, "I have acquired wealth and do not need a thing." And Jesus slams them and says, "You are naked and poor and wretched and whatever." How do we avoid that? How do we avoid being that conceited, self-assured, self-reliant person who turns away from God when things are going well? Sorry. Essentially, how do we be good winners? I encourage you first to stop and see what's going on. Often I think we skate through these times of God saying yes without ever even noticing. We need to connect the dots and see how God's goodness has followed us through our life. You may have heard this saying that our lives are like a tapestry that God is weaving. And he sees it from the top, this beautiful picture that he's making through our lives. And we see it from the bottom. We see all these little strings hanging down and crisscrossing knots and whatever, and we don't know how great our lives are in God's eyes. Now, I think that it's not too much to ask that we ask God sometimes that we get to, peek up onto the top and see what's going on and see his goodness in our lives. At the very least, we can see what's rolling off of the loom that he's already made and see God's goodness in my life in the past has been evident. And so obviously what he's doing now is good too. And then secondly, I think we need to pass that on. I looked in the book of Psalms and searched for the word tell, and I found at least 13 different psalms that all talk about telling about God's wonderful works. One example is Psalm 105, verses 1 through 3 that I'm going to read. It says, "Give praise to the Lord, proclaim his name, make known among the nations what he has done, sing to him, sing praise to him, tell of his wonderful acts, glory in his holy name, let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice." Which brings me to the third thing, which is we need to celebrate. So in the Old Testament, you have God telling Moses and the Israelites all these different celebrations. Give your first fruits back to the Lord. Celebrate what he has done in his harvest. Celebrate the past, how he brought you out of slavery. Retell these things and retell them. And they have these holidays, basically, that are set up for that. Now, nowadays we have Christmas and Easter and we have Thanksgiving. And obviously those should be times when we reflect on what God has done in our lives. I think maybe we do that. But a lot of times we kind of get caught up in just having a nice Christmas tree, and we forget to celebrate. And I think that we need to find creative ways to do that all year round, to celebrate what God is doing publicly with our families. And when I think about celebrations, I think about a woman named Carla, who we knew well when we lived in Nicaragua. A year after we got married, we spent a year in Nicaragua in this village, and each month we ate with a different family. One month we ate with Carla's family, and she didn't have any furniture in her house. It was a dirt floor house. She would sit on an overturned water bucket, and I would sit on this big rock that protruded out of the ground of the dirt floor of her house, and she would tell us stories of her life. And one day, we're sitting there by candlelight at night, she's talking about her life, and this enormous pig comes into her house, which it often did, sure, animals would go everywhere, and it sat down in front of her, and she slapped it on the side, and she said, "This one's for my celebración." And I said, "Celebration? What celebration?" And I asked her about it, and she explained that she had had three different experiences in her life where she saw God's work so clearly, miraculously, powerfully in her life, that each one she had celebrated. And this was the third one. And later in the year, sure enough, she slaughtered this enormous pig, had a huge pig roast, and also spent probably at least a month's worth of wages on food from town, made a huge feast, invited her village and another village, invited a church. There wasn't a church in that village. Invited a neighboring village's church to come with their amplifiers and a generator. There was no electricity. Pumped out all this music, fed hundreds of people in an enormous celebration. I've never seen anybody celebrate God's goodness in that way. And I encourage you to brainstorm if there's some tiny little hint of how you can do anything like that to praise God publicly. So I want to close by sharing with you a song by Sarah Groves that's based on these same words, "Great is thy faithfulness," these same words from Lamentations. It's a song that I had loved for years, and it was on the CD player in the hospital when my daughter was born. Now, I had been told that I probably would not be able to have children, and it's a long story, but I found out I was pregnant 4.5 months into pregnancy at a time when we were 2 weeks from moving to China and starting grad school. So there was a lot of tumult in my life at that time. I actually was not excited about it when I found out I was pregnant. I was scared out of my mind. And my whole future just looked in upheaval. So here I am in this hospital, and this song comes on while I'm holding this brand new baby and just hearing these words, "Great is thy faithfulness, morning by morning, new mercies I see." And it made me look back and see God has made this beautiful tapestry of my life. He has orchestrated this. He knows way better than I do when to say no and when to say yes and how to move on in my life. So I encourage you, listen to this song. And as you're listening, ask yourself either no's that God has said in your life that you're holding bitterness over. Do you need to say to God, "I will trust you either way," whether it's a yes or a no, whether I get what I want or it's just what you want. Maybe things in your life are just hard, and you're in that little prison cell, wanting God to just open a window and let in some light. And you need to say, as Jeremiah did, "My soul is downcast within me, yet this I remember and have hope that your love is without fail." And I encourage you to count your compassions as you listen. Think to yourself, what has God done to show his mercy and his compassion in your life today, this week, in this season of your life? And as you do that, brainstorm, is there a way that you can tell somebody, that you can celebrate this, whether it's in a conversation with your family or your friends, or if you want to hold a pig roast? And if you do, please, I'd like to be the first to be invited. Thank you. So let's hear the song.